श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण। सो प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, गुड evening. I know this is not what you were expecting today, this time. It's not what I was expecting myself either. So, just for you to be a little bit more, have some consolation, I'm in a more awkward situation than you. But here we are trying to serve Srila Gurudev in separation somehow. So, that's the most important committed service. So he's, by not being here, he's created further opportunities to serve him in a more substantial way. So we are trying to welcome that, all of us. So in his service, sharing some words today, I'll share with you some words about Brahma Stuti, since of course I was expecting to speak tomorrow on Guru Purnim, and still that's the plan, but let's see, we never know. So today I will continue with a series of lectures that I've been given for the last months on the prayers of Brahma. And today we are on prayer number 25, so we have already begun some time ago. Since we are starting here in one sense, and some of you may have not listened to these lectures, I will make a very brief recap, not so brief. Some of you already know my summaries. So I'll try to summarize like 27 lectures in 5 minutes or something. So basically, as you may recall, Brahma Stuti refers to the prayers of Brahma, which are offered after the famous Brahma Vimohan Lila, or the ultra bewilderment of Sri Brahma or something like that. And this takes place in a very important section of the Bhagavatam, or Guru Maharaj really likes a lot to elaborate on this section, in which Brahma becomes upgraded in his prospect. Since at the beginning of creation he meets Bhagavan, he expresses some inclinations toward the possibility of Sakya, and Bhagavan says, "So be it." Will make the arrangements, and eventually he receives a trailer of what Sakya Rasa is about in the form of Krishna with his friends having picnic in the fullest of informalities, basically. And Krishna in Vrindavan, already he's the god of informality, and Brahma is basically the god of formality, and that's one of his names, Vidhi. So you have this particular clashing here, no? The very epitome of formality and the very epitome of informality, basically. Krishna with his friends having picnic in Sakya Mandal, in a friendly circle, eating with left hand, sharing the remnants with Krishna, vice versa. Too much for Brahma. He wanted Sakya Prem, but he never played out the implications of that. So that's an important point. We may say, "I want this." We may not be aware of all that it implies till we are vimohan ourselves. And we realize, well, no, I don't know if I wanted that. No. Krishna, I want to fully surrender to you. Make whatever arrangement you want for that to happen. Maybe after 5 minutes we are praying Krishna again. Undo, like you do in the email when we were speaking the other day. Give me blessings, still it's time to bless the undo button. So, it's okay, this part work in progress, as Brahma himself is a sadaka, so he's showing that example to us. We may have some utsahamayi in the beginning, some enthusiasm, I want this, and then when the implications of that play out, you seem like you are attacking that thing that you wanted, because Brahma said, "I want Sakya," but then he was kidnapping Krishna's friends, trying to at least. I'm thinking this blue boy is an imposter, he's not my guru. So, interesting situation. And as we know, The outcome of that was that Krishna eventually expanded himself for a year in the forms of the cubs and the forms of the Krishna's friends in such a way that nobody noticed, almost. But at the end of the year, as we mentioned, yeah, the Balaram starts to notice there is something strange here, because everyone in Vrindavan is loving the calves more than Krishna, or as Krishna, or everyone is loving these boys, their fathers are loving their children as Krishna. That's not normal. I mean, that may be normal here, but not in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, if someone is loving someone else than Krishna as Krishna, that's weird. So Balaram was scanning the situation and said, there's something strange here. All of them are loving all these people as Krishna. Only everyone loves Krishna more than everyone else here. So eventually he realizes all of these boys and cubs were Krishna. So that's how he explained it. And eventually, as we know, Brahma returns after a year thinking the boys and the cubs are in the so-called cave he thought he put them. And he finds the boys and calves there, but they find the boys and calves normally in Vrindavan, these expansions of Krishna. So Balaram is, Brahma is like going back to the cave to see if Krishna took the boys from the cave and now we're in Vrindavan. They were in the cave, he returned to Vrindavan, they were in Vrindavan. He went quickly to see if, but he realized what's going on here. So one head, as we say, starts spinning. He had four. So not be Mohan yet, but some pray Mohan. And then, as we know, eventually all this, from all these cubs and boys, unlimited forms of Narayana start to have to manifest, which basically represent the highest point of Aishwarya in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. So the highest Aishwarya of the Bhagavatam takes place in Vrindavan, interestingly. Only Brahma is saying that. Vrayabhasis will be too disturbed to see such a degree of Aishwarya. It was not for them. So at this point, Brahma's heads, at least two or three of them are spinning. He's seeing Narayans coming from Krishna, which is the main section in the Bhagavatam in which this idea of Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam is being played out in motion. And eventually, and many universes coming then, and different Brahmas worshipping all these Krishnas, all these Narayans. So Brahma is he himself worshipping Narayan. So you can imagine how bizarre that was for him. And just to conclude, all the things suddenly wrap up, disappear. And at this point, Brahma closed his eyes because it was too much Aishwarya to deal with. And he's pretty much accustomed to Aishwarya. This was too much. So he was about to die of an overdose of Aishwarya. So he closed his eyes to survive. And when he opened his eyes, Krishna wrapped up the whole unfolding, and it was just as before in the initial stage, initial scene, with a morsel of food in his hands and looking for his friends and cats. So at this point, the foreheads of Brahma were full speed spinning. He falls from the swan, he touches the earth, he puts his head on the dust of Raj, and he starts to offer prayers at the feet of Krishna, bathing his feet with his tears, taking turns with the foreheads to offer pranam to Krishna, and bathing his feet, offering abhishek, and reciting this Brahma Stuti, through which Brahma will establish the whole Gaudiya Siddhanta in the context of expressing his attainment, his wish for attaining Sakyabhava. He's establishing his, how to say, explaining to himself his desire for Sakya premise, explaining to himself by invoking all the Siddhanta that has to be there as a foundation for the Bhava project to be in place. So that's basically the background to these prayers. Of course, we already studied 24 prayers. I won't make a summary of those. That may take a few days. But briefly, Brahma has explained the superiority of bhakti, about jnana and yoga and other processes, and the importance of pure bhakti and the eternality of Krishna's form, even though it seems medium-sized. It seems ordinary, but now Brahma realized unlimited forms of God emanate from that so-called medium-sized, all-pervading little Krishna. All-pervading little Krishna. We have to deal with these paradoxes. And that's our God, the all-pervading little Krishna. So Brahma is glorifying this, and through this glorification, he's increasing his longing and his own understanding of what's going on, basically, in his heart, through his own conversion. So, before going to today's verse, we usually make a brief recap of the last verse, because generally between one verse and the other there is some thread that connects one with the other, so to keep some context in mind. So, some days ago, that was in Finland, some 1 week ago or something, we studied verse 24. So I will briefly read it in English for you, some brief words, and then we go to verse 25 that I suspect is there. Okay. So verse 24 first says, those who have received the perfect eye in the form of confidential knowledge obtained from the sun-like spiritual master can see you in this way as the very soul of all souls, the super soul of everyone's own self. Thus, understanding your original personality, they are able to cross over the ocean of illusory material existence. That's verse 24. So, this is a verse that the commentators have explained at different levels in connection to Sutta Bhakti, but also in connection to Jnanis mixing their Jnana with Bhakti to attain basically Mukti. So, this verse speaks up about the role of the Guru. Tomorrow we will explain more about this in Guru Purnim, how the Guru is given what we call Shastra Chakshu, which means the eye, the scriptural eye. No? By he here presenting Shastra, he's, how to say, teaching the student to see reality through the eyes of Shastra, of revealed knowledge. As we recited some minutes ago, Jnana Anjana Salakya. So Guru is giving the Jnana Anjana, which means the ointment of knowledge, the salve of knowledge. Brahma Samhita say Primanjana Chirita Bhakti Vilochanena. That's another Anjana. There are degrees of Anjanas. If you go to the Anjana shop, they will have different Adhikars. So I want Anjana. What's your Adhikar? Let's see. So first you have to have the Jnana Anjana, the ointment of knowledge. And then eventually, by applying that properly, will come Prima Anjana. Your eyes will be attinged with the salve of love, and you will be seeing Syama Sundara everywhere, as Brahma Samhita is saying. So this verse is speaking about transcending samsara, for example. But at the same time, some commentators say this verse speaks about Sudhavaktas. So what does for Sudhavaktas samsara has to transcending samsara has to do? We know that for Sudha Bhakta, samsara, or transcending samsara is, I mean, samsara is way beyond, transcending samsara is way beyond what the desire for that, what to speak of samsara itself. Interestingly. So, with a play of word, we'll say for them, samsara is samsara. Sara means essence, and sam means complete. So, there's this samsara, there's another samsara. This samsara is described as a forest fire. Those are in another forest fire, the forest fire of separation from the beloved and so on. So the position of the Sudha Bhakta is they have attained mukti from mukti. They are liberated from liberation itself, basically. And of course, someone who wants mukti, a jnani basically, who mixes his her practice with bhakti, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments here, they will attain shantarasa, basically. That's it. The highest reach of their aspiration. So some words regarding this previous verse. I'm trying to repress myself to not expand more and go to today's verse. And I know many of you are arriving to there, so probably you have some long journey, you may be tired, so I don't want to extend that much today, but we never know also. I know those seats are dangerous. They promote some form of sayuja. Bhrigupada is about to merge to attain oneness with the asana. So let's pray for each other here. Let's take care of each other and support each other. So today we'll continue with verse 25. And this verse and the next four more, Brahma will criticize somehow those who consider the form of Bhagavan and the form of Krishna, specifically he's having in front of him now, as mithya or as false, which of course basically connects with the followers of Shankaracharya. Also we will find some different interpretations to these verses. So let's go to verse 25.
Hope we have the same one. I'm on the same page, literally.
Yes. So, this is in one meter called Indravamsa. This is the name of the meter, Chanda. So, how we can do? I recite first and then all together? Okay.
1 second.
I will share here online as well.
It says like this.
Atmanam ivatmataya vijnanatam tinaivajatam nikilam prapanchitam jnanena bhuya pichatat praliyate rajvam mahirbhoga bhava bhavojata. Atmanam ivatmataya vijnanatam tinaivajatam nikilam prapanchitam jnanena bhuyo pichatat praliyate rajam maher bhoga bhava bhavo jata.
You have the English also there?
No.
Oh, okay. So here comes the English then. A person who mistakes a rope for a snake, famous analogy, becomes fearful. But he then gives up his fear upon realizing that the so-called snake does not exist. Similarly, for those who fail to recognize you as the supreme soul of all souls, the expansive illusory material existence arises, but knowledge of you at once causes it to subside. So basically this is the today's verse invoking this famous rope and snake analogy, but in another context. Generally it's invoked by the followers of Shankaracharya to support their thesis, but here Brahma is invoking it to smash their thesis basically. So that shows how analogies can render so many purposes. So just in case you are very willing to prove Siddhanta through analogies, that's not the way, because someone else can use the same analogy to prove exactly the opposite. So an analogy can help to illustrate something that has to be proved by Shastra, but not it cannot prove Siddhanta in itself. So I'll share with you the word by word meaning. I can repeat the word. I can share repeat the word, and you repeat with me after, both Sanskrit and Spanish. I gave a Spanish lecture 2 hours ago. I'm tired. Probably in some minutes I start to speak Polish or something. You let me know, Jason. Oh, no, I do not know Polish. Everything can happen here. So, Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Yourself.
Yourself.
Eva.
Eva.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Atmataya.
Atmataya.
As the Supreme Soul.
As the Supreme Soul.
Avijatanam.
Avijatanam.
Sorry, Avijanatam.
Avijanatam.
For those who do not understand.
For those who do not understand.
Tenaiva.
Tenaiva.
Only by that.
Only by that.
Jatam.
Jatam.
Is generated.
Is generated.
Nikilam.
Nikilam.
The entire.
The entire.
Prapanchitam.
Prapanchitam.
Material existence.
Material existence.
Jnanena.
Jnanena.
By knowledge.
By knowledge.
Bhuyapi.
Bhuyapi.
Once again.
Once again.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
That.
Praliyate.
Praliyate.
Disappears.
Disappears.
Rajam.
Rajam.
Within a rope.
Within a rope.
Ahi.
Ahi.
Of a snake.
Of a snake.
Bhoga.
Bhoga.
Of the body.
Of the body.
Bhava abhavu.
Bhava abhavu.
The existence and the non-existence.
The existence and the non-existence.
Yatha.
Yatha.
Just us.
Just us.
Okay. So let's try to share some words regarding this verse. The way we are doing it, I'm beginning by sharing some words from our Guru Maharaj, because he has written a commentary on the Brahma Stuti, interestingly. I did not know till I wrote to him some months ago to ask him for the blessings. I mean, to ask him which topic he considered I may speak about, and share the idea that I had to speak on Brahma Stuti. So he told me, "Oh, I've written a commentary on Brahma Stuti." I said, "Oh, really?" "Yeah, that will be part of my forthcoming book," he said. So I was like, "So the implication of that is I can share with you if you want." Okay, yes. So he shared with me generously the commentary, so he also gave some guidelines as to how conduct the explanation of the verses. So I'm beginning with that, and then we continue with the ancient commentators like Sanatana Goswami, Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and others. So fasten your seatbelts. Okay. Srila Guru Maharaj begins, his commentary is called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvad, and it says like this. "While it can be said that knowledge of the Atma alone does away with samsara, knowing the Atma in full involves knowing it is rooted in Bhagavan, who presides over Maya. The Jivatma that does not know Bhagavan, as he can be known only through bhakti, remains constrained by Maya. That is her seva to Bhagavan, Maya's seva. Such jivatmas are turned away from God and as such fearful. But that jivatma, who knows itself to be rooted in Bhagavan, is not under the constraint of Maya, nor subject to ongoing transmigration." I'm speaking too quickly, Kalpatara Prabhu? Okay, sorry, I remind to ask you 20 minutes after starting. So, this is our Guru Maharaj's Bhavanuvad, or elaboration, this particular verse. He mentioned some interesting points here, which should be drawn from this verse. And to begin with, he says that we can know the Atma on some level, and on some level do away with samsara. But full-fledged knowledge of the Atma, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, full-fledged knowledge of the Atma implies not only knowing the Atma, but knowing the source of the Atma. Because if we technically analyze who we are not separate from our source. So we cannot be like totally disconnected and alienated from our source. Statasya Shakti. And the source of the Atma is Paramatma. So we could say full knowledge of the Atma is to know the source of the Atma, who is Paramatma. But fuller knowledge of the Atma means to know the source of the source of the Atma. Because Paramatma has its source, who is Bhagavan. And if we want to go further, the fullest implication of this, what does it mean to know the Atma? It means to know that the ultimate source of Bhagavan, of all forms of Bhagavan, is Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Vraja Krishna, specifically. And when the Bhagavatam is saying Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, actually saying Vraja Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. It's not saying Dwarka Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, Mathuresh Krishna Stu Bhagavan, Vraja Krishna Stu Bhagavan. And interestingly, one name for him is also Atma. That can be a name for the divine as well. So fully knowing the Atma with small a implies knowing Atma with capital A. So this is one of the, and this is one of the main points established in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Krishna is to Bhagavan. So yeah, Krishna is even the source of God. That's an interesting idea. Krishna is God beyond God. Krishna is not God. Krishna is something else than God. God is an aspect of Krishna. Krishna is not an aspect of God. God is an aspect of Krishna. Narayana Angam. Brahma said some verses ago, Narayana is your Anga. Narayana is your limb. Narayana is God. God is your limb. Imagine, try to imagine the shock of Brahma. 5 minutes ago he thought, this little guy is an imposter. And after 5 minutes he realizes, God is an aspect of you. There is quite a gap between one idea and the other. You are a cheater, you are the source of God himself. In 5 minutes. So, be Mohan. So the fullest implication again of knowing Atma means to know the source of the source of the source of the Atma. No? Atma is its source, Paramatma its source, Bhagavan and its source, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And how to know Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, how to fully know someone, as Guru Maharaj will say, is loving someone. Braja Krishna is ultimately known by through intimacy. That's what prevails in the Braj. And that's only possible, of course, through bhakti. And a specific type of bhakti. Bhakti hamikayagraha, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, I'm only to be known through bhakti. And that's why Gita says Raja Vidya. Bhakti is the king of knowledge. Because only through that knowledge you can know the ultimate face of the divine. And of course, he's the king of secrets. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. The king of secrets is love, basically. So through love, we can know the source of the source of the source of the Atma, and can know the Atma in its fullest implications, in connection to its sources, if you will. And of course, if we choose not to do so, if we choose not bhakti, basically we will be left with the opposite of love, which is fear. That's what this verse is speaking about. That's the main symptom of someone living under the influence of Maya Shakti. To inhabit under the so-called shelter of Maya Shakti, that's called in Sanskrit Durashraya. Durashraya means false shelter. You may feel like totally sheltered under Maya Shakti, it feels cozy here, it's nice. But it's Durashraya, it's false sense of shelter. So the main symptom of that quote-unquote shelter is bhaya, or fear, basically. But of course, knowing all the things, knowing bhakti, knowing Bhagavan, knowing our source of source and sources, and of course, acting accordingly, it's not just knowing Krishna is still Bhagavan, so I am, and continue doing nonsense. That doesn't mean knowing that. To know that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan means you are acting out your belief. It makes no sense. I believe in God. And then you close your mouth and you walk exactly in the opposite direction to that phrase that you just said some minutes ago. It's like how much you are walking your belief. So you have to play out the belief. So if you do so, you transcend Maya's influence, basically. And of course, if we engage in bhakti and surrender to Bhagavan Sri Krishna, transcending Maya is just a secondary byproduct, even. That's not even the main intention of the bhakta. As we mentioned some minutes ago, bhakti, real bhakti, Sudha bhakti, Uttam bhakti has most to do with post-liberated status, as Guru Maharaj likes to say. It goes way beyond liberation. And that's what Brahma is, again, appreciating here. He's having a glimpse of Braja bhakti. Again, 5 minutes ago, he thought all these guys here are uncivilized tribe they don't know even how to eat. That's the very first thing you are taught by your mother or something. Take the spoon, right hand, sit like this, say thank you.
when these are stealing their own lunches with the left hand and doing a mess and screaming and rolling on the ground, they don't even know how to eat. They are totally uncivilized. And now he's realizing these so-called uncivilized people are beyond liberation. They seem so ordinary because they are so extraordinary that starts to seem ordinary. Something like that. That's the life of the Brajavasis, as I think we spoke in Finland. They are post-liberated. Post-liberated means beyond liberation. And beyond liberation means they do not care for liberation. And they do not care for liberation means they consider themselves Bhadajivas. They are so much beyond liberation that they think we are totally entangled in samsara. But we don't care. As long as we can remain with Krishna. That was the Ask Krishna, as we say the other day. After Nanda Maharaj was kidnapped into the ocean by the agents of Varuna, they return, they hear all these extraordinary things that Krishna did. They ask Krishna, can you show us our next life? We heard that you did some pretty extraordinary things, so extraordinary people can do these extraordinary things like showing next life. So Krishna said, okay. So immerse yourself into the water for a minute. He creates some mysticism for a minute. Go down the water, go up, close your eyes, open your eyes, see your next life. So the Brajavasis saw this portal that Krishna manifested, and it was like if he would have put a mirror in front of them, basically. If I tell you that now, that you want to see your next life? You won't? Not so sure. Do you care for liberation, for no next life? Well, let's suppose you say yes. And I put you a mirror here. And you see each other all together, listening Harikatha and Satsanga. What will Prabhupada say? Who are you? So, he's a Brajavasi here. That's what the Brajavasis did. They saw themselves together, the cows were there, the houses were there, Krishna was there. And they said, great. What better thing can we think of? Thank you so much, Krishna. Let's continue. So that shows the degree to which they are beyond liberation. They do not care for that. They do not even think for that. No. So that means to be a post-liberated person. They are so extraordinary that to the untrained eye, it seems ordinary. That's what Brahma thought in the beginning. These are totally ordinary people. 5 minutes after that, oh my God, this little boy, the source of God, and therefore, who are these people? No? Of course, he will play that, especially in the next few verses, not now, but 32 and so others. Ho vagyam nanda gopa brajoka sanam, this verse, like, who are they? Yamitram paramanandam punam brahma sanada. Who are they? Who is he? Now the section is mostly, who is he? Now, who are you? Who are you? And then, and who are they? That have such an intimate connection to you. And who am I in between of all this? Because I would like to be something in between all of you, but I'm realizing who I am, where I am, where I would like to be, where I just did, just a mess. And as we say, Brahma feels, I committed Rupa Aparad because I consider the form of Krishna to be ordinary. I committed Lila Aparad because I'm trying to interrupt the picnic, and so on. So many apparatus I committed, so how will I ever possibly enter here? So with he's offering these prayers with a heart deep in repentance and so on. So anyhow, he's gradually awakening to this reality, who Krishna actually is, who the Brajavasis actually is, and who he actually is in his prospect among themselves. So this also depicts the journey of the sadhaka. Gradually, we should go through all these epiphanies. No. Because now we may say, Maharaj, I know who Krishna is. I won't mistake like Brahma did as an imposter. Son. You never know. You never know. No. You may have, you, if you say that, be ready for the test. Be ready for the picnic or some situation. So, gradually, we will go through all the things that we heard so much about Krishna, but a very different thing is to have full realization of who he is. We hear so much about Brajavasis, but a different thing is to have a glimpse of who they are in every single sense of the term. And eventually, who I am. Again, who Krishna is,
who the Vrajavasis are in connection to him, and who I am in connection to the Vrajavasis. Who am I supposed to follow in Raganuga Bhakti? So all this will gradually have to awaken our life. Anyhow, some words in connection to what Guru Maharaj mentioned in his Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhava. Let me share some words next from Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad, his Brihat Vaishnav Toshni commentary. So he will... I won't say everything that everyone is saying in their commentaries because they repeat some things, so I'll just try to compliment. Sanatana Goswami says, for those who think I am Bhagavan, or I am the Absolute, Brahman, whatever, that ignorance produces samsara. Because the verse is speaking about avidya creating samsara. So what's that ignorance? He takes the opportunity to do a little smashing towards Mayavad, as usual. That's part of what does it mean to be a Gaudiya Vaishnava commentator. You have to have your proper dose of Mayavad smashing. Srila Prabhupada makes some Guinness record of that. Vida ras, spirit overflowing. But it's okay. That had a purpose in mind, for sure. So Sanatana, he said, we are seeing here, Prabhupada was backed by his Purvacharya, so he was not the only one doing that. So if you think I am Bhagavan, or I am great in whatever sense, that ignorance produces samsara. And again, Brahma somehow, some minutes ago, was thinking, I'm considerably big guy. No, I'm Brahma. Now he doesn't feel so like that. He feels like bordering non-existence, realizing his insignificancy. Then Sanatana Goswami gives another meaning. He's famous for doing that in his commentaries. He gives one possible interpretation of the verse and then says, or, and comes another possible, and then says, or, and he shares one after another. So then he says, or, for those who do not know Bhagavan as the dearest, that very ignorance produces samsara. So he puts the standard a little bit higher here. Maybe you are not thinking in Bhagavan. Maybe you know Bhagavan. There's one, someone called Bhagavan. But you have to know him as the dearest. That's the implication of knowing Bhagavan. You follow? I mean, because the nature of Bhagavan is that he has the potential to become the dearest in your life. So if you say, I know Bhagavan, but he's not my dearest, how much you know Bhagavan? You follow? Because you can know Bhagavan in the sense of, I know that he exists. Like you may say, you know, whatever, then you pronounce the name of the neighbor there and you know the neighbor, yeah, I know him. So, but you start to ask more intimate detail, I don't have a clue. So, I know, but I don't know. But Bhagavan is such a person that you can only say I know him if he's the dearest. That's the potential of our relationship with him. If that's not there, Sanatana Goswami says, the ignorance of that, ignoring Bhagavan as your dearest, produces samsara. Still, you have some lesson to learn in that connection. He concludes his commentary saying, by proper knowledge alone of this type that we are speaking, this world is definitely destroyed in the most excellent way. That's an interesting expression. Let's destroy the world in the most excellent way. Do not make Putin hear my expression here. Every person may have their own idea what's the meaning of destroying the world in the most excellent way. Of course, the idea here of destroying the world doesn't mean let's make the planet Earth disappear, but refers to mukti, to the idea of transcending mundane experience. But, Sanatana Goswami says, the word cha, also, the word cha is also here, indicates that the desire for liberation is also destroyed. Because again, here is pointing more to Sudha Bhakti. So Sudha Bhakti is not about mukti, it's about destroying this world in the most excellent way, but destroying mukti in the most excellent way also. Transcending mukti. Matsivaya pratitam te salukyari chatustaya nichanti sivaya punna kutunyat kalaviplutam. 9th canto of the Bhagavatam saying, Bhagavan saying to Durvas, Matsivaya pratitam. My devotees are so much satisfied, purna sevaya. They feel so much complete in my seva As Salokya, Salokya and all these other muktis, devotional muktis, not even Sayuja, that's not in their map. They lose sight of that, basically. It's not that it's even inferior. It disappears. The more we progress, that will become like that. In the beginning of our practice, we know in theory, bhukti, mukti, is inferior to bhakti. In theory, we know. We may still not be fully convinced in practice. But in theory, we know that we should repeat that when they ask that in the class. Bhukti, mukti are inferior to bhakti. So that's sadhana bhakti. In sadhana, you have that level of realization. In bhava bhakti, Rupa Goswami said, moksha labhuta krit sudullabha. Mukti and bhukti will become not inferior, but insignificant. And then prem bhakti, mukti and bhukti are not only insignificant, they disappear altogether. Like when you are flying on a plane, I have pretty good experience of that last years. I can share this analogy with realization. And in the beginning, you see through the window and everything has some size. And the plane starts to go up and you see that inferior, smaller, a little bit more up, insignificant. Above the clouds, disappear. You are in another planet altogether with clouds and other stuff there, another level. The other thing disappears. It's still there, but in one sense disappears. So something like that here as well. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami, who of course follows in many ways in the footsteps of Sri Sanatana Goswami Pad. And Srila Jiva Goswami begins presenting some argument, if you will. Someone may say, those who do not know themselves as Atma and who do not know you as the root Swarup, and the root cause and everything, they end up with material bodies by the agency of Maya. A devotee of the Lord who cannot tolerate this mistake. So he depicts here Maya Shakti as a devotee of Bhagavan, which of course she is. And she is described as Maya cannot tolerate this mistake, which is the mistake not knowing the Atma and not knowing Bhagavan as the root of everything. So she cannot tolerate that. I mean, she's angry and is trying to make us fall and all these like Christianized prospects of because Satan-like energies doing. Maya Shakti is a servant of Bhagavan. She's doing her service, and someone has to be there to deal with that particular section. But she's doing that as a service of Bhagavan. So those who choose not to love Bhagavan, okay, there has to be some particular department for them. Maya Shakti is performing that in the spirit of seva and providing, as Guru Maharaj will say, negative impetus to those jivas so they can gradually turn their faces towards Bhagavan. That's the ultimate intention of Maya Shakti. So Maya Shakti is not a bad lady or something, a witch. Although Bhaktivinoda Thakur may have used those expressions, but mostly to describe the bewitching effect of her influence, but not because she's a black magician or something like that. She's a servant of Bhagavan. So be careful to commit aparat towards Maya Shakti. Jiva Goswami then says, by knowledge of Bhagavan, I'm trying to remember when our acharya say by knowledge of Bhagavan, it's not just you get some information, but you apply yourself to that information, so that becomes transformation. We are almost losing Prabhupada Prabhu. So I don't think you want to lose him. We want him as an individual for eternity. So be careful with Sayuja. Prabhupada, be careful with Sayuja. We condemn that in theory, but when the opportunity presents itself, we never know. Sorry, I have to use someone as scapegoat or something. I remember once one friend of mine, Sannyasi, he Bhakti Swarup Siddhartha, said, we say mukti is inferior and insignificant, but if mukti Devi personified will appear in front of us and invite, you can have peace forever. No more suffering, no more gunas. Resting for eternity, you can come now. And he'll say, we never know if we will take the ride or not. So we need to be put to test, so we can affirm our own ideals more and more. And if someone is about to get lost in submersion, we have time to bring them back. So Rigupa is accompanying with renewed strength now. There was a purpose to the pre-merging. So Jiva Goswami said, by knowledge of Bhagavan, one not only destroys one's own ignorance of Bhagavan, but one also attains knowledge of one's sarup, who we are in relation to Bhagavan, one's nature. And this in turn destroys the ignorance caused by identity with the body. That's our identity. We have an intrinsic connection of dasyatva, or servanthood, with our source. With the example of seeing the snake in the place of a rope, Brahma clarifies how this destroying of ignorance takes place. So I think you all know this example. That's why I never bothered to explain it. So sorry for that. Maybe you don't know it. You are after 45 minutes wondering, what's the snake in the room? So basically the idea is, if you are in the dark room and there is nothing to see, you cannot see anything, and there is one rope in the room, but there is no light. So you are somehow, trapped in the room, let's say. I'm adding some ingredients to the example. And you touch the rope, but due to lack of light, you think this is a snake, due to imperfect sense perception. So you can imagine, you are in a closed room, you and a snake. No? So you probably will start to chant your japa more fervently than ever. But the point is that a sense of fear arises out of a misreading of reality due to an improper perception. If suddenly light comes, all that fear that you were thinking, you were trembling and sweating and crying, disappears immediately when you realize, oh, it was a rope, it was not a snake. So the idea here is light knowledge. No? When knowledge comes about who Bhagavan is, all the theater, this drama of fear and anxiety called Srishti Lila, or whatever, however you like to call it, samsara, better put, disappears. And you can see reality for what it is. There was no snake, in one sense. There was not reason to be afraid, basically. So all the things that we are afraid of actually show how need we are of further enlightenment in our life, to see things as they are. And Jiva Goswami almost concludes his commentary by quoting a famous verse from the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, which basically describes this and summarizes many important points in our tradition. Bhayam dvitiya avinibheshatasya isadapitasya viparyarya smriti tanmaya yatam buddhavacittam vaityai kaisam gurudevatatma. That's a nice verse. To unpack that verse, we need like 200 retreats or something like that. There's a lot in this verse. But basically, it is mentioned there that for a jiva who is averse, you say, contrary to Bhagavan, there will be constant samsara due to which the samsara will consist in identification with a wrong sense of self, lack of identity with the soul. This due because of absorption in duality, dvitiya avinivesata. And all this coming from the maya of Hari. And how to solve this whole dilemma? An intelligent person will worship God through the Guru, who is to be considered the dearmost friend and as God Himself in one's life. Gurudeva Tatma. Bhaktyaikayesam Gurudeva Tatma. So that's a way to transcend maya, by surrendering to the department who is beyond maya. As simple as it sounds, and as difficult as it may be in the practice. But it's simple logic. No? Tatastha Shakti is prone to be influenced by Maya Shakti. That means Tatastha, basically. One of the possibilities means we can be influenced by Maya Shakti. I think we can all share our unauthorized biography in that regard. But also the means that there is hope to go beyond Maya Shakti, and for that we have to look in the direction of that department who is beyond Maya Shakti, who has never been affected by Maya Shakti, and that's Bhagavan and his Swarup Shakti. Daivi yesa unamayi mama maya duratya mameva ye prapadante maya metam tadamtite. Similar idea in the Gita. Krishna says this Maya Shakti is very difficult to overcome. So you imagine Krishna telling you that something is very difficult. Basically, you will think impossible. If Krishna considers something very difficult, I mean, he's not under the influence of Maya, but he's saying, difficult. Duratya. But then he quickly says in the second half of the verse, because he sees we are getting depressed and suicidal even, say, wait, there is hope. This is very almost impossible to transcend Maya Shakti by yourself, but those who surrender unto me, prapadante, mayametam tarante, they can transcend that very easily. That which is almost impossible becomes very easy. That which is compared sometimes as to an ocean, samsara, becomes reduced to the water that can enter in the, how do you say, hoofprint of a calf. So try to make the comparison. Ocean, calf hoofprint. But in the middle, you have to have surrender to Bhagavan, bhakti. So bhakti makes the impossible possible, basically. That's another way to put it. Achinte Shakti. Jiva Goswami concludes saying, just by knowledge of the position of Bhagavan in general, comes an interesting point. Just by knowledge of the position of Bhagavan in general, Maya is destroyed. So to know in general about Bhagavan, that's still pretty powerful. This does not require realization of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. So Jiva Goswami makes a difference between Bhagavan and Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. So you can know about Bhagavan and that will destroy Maya. But if knowledge of Braja Krishna, who is the most complete form of Godhead, is the greatest. And the result of that knowledge is the appearance of the highest prem for Krishna. So he made this different, categorical difference between mukti and prem. You can attain mukti by generic knowledge of generic Bhagavan, but if you want a specific type of prem, which is our goal, Purushartha, Shiromani, Panchama, Purushartha, that requires king of knowledge, another specific type of knowledge. We have some 10 minutes more before concluding? Yeah. We have eternity to engage in Harikatha? Okay. Nityam Bhagavata Sivaya Kirtaniya Sadahari Sattar Kirtayantamam. Forever, Bhrigu? He's not convinced. He needs some extra.
You will be tomorrow.
10 minutes, I promise. And then Sayuja. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Sarartha Darshani. He will give a particular focus of this verse. He says, verses 24 and 25, previous one of this, describe the Vivartavad theory of the impersonalists, who claim that the material world is unreal and the act of transcending the material world is also unreal or false. Mayavas will say, basically, all this is Maya. Because for them, everything is Maya except Brahman. So material world, Maya. Transcending material world, Maya. Jiva transcending material world, Maya. Brahman, real. Brahma Satya, everything else Mithya. That is why the word asif, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is sarcastically used here in describing the act of transcending the material world. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is reading this verse slightly different, as if depicting followers of Sankaracharya who engage in this exercise, and they become as if transcendental to the world. Those who are unaware that the individual spirit soul is made of knowledge and bliss must enter the material realm. It is because of ignorance that no one can understand the true nature of the soul, and because of ignorance the material world of five elements was created. And he concludes saying, the word praliyate, disappears, it means, implies that by sankhya, yoga, renunciation, austerity and bhakti, one attains transcendental wisdom, realizes that the body is different from the soul, and destroys the ocean of material existence. All these goals are more jnana-like. Such a person no longer mistakes a rope for a snake. And with this understanding, he is liberated from fear. By ignorance, the material world continues. And by knowing Krishna, the material world ceases. He concludes with some devotional remark. By knowing Krishna, there is no more material world. We spoke the other day about this also. Like, if you are a devotee, strictly speaking, you don't have any more material life. Technically speaking, you should not be speaking in terms of my spiritual life and my material life. That means you do not understand what bhakti is and how bhakti can purify every corner of your so-called material life. So if you are a sadhaka, you should not think in terms of my material life, my spiritual... You yourself are creating the duality. If you want, okay, your problem. But ideally, you shouldn't think like that. You shouldn't think about your family, house, job, body as part of my material life. And my spiritual life is when prasadam comes. Or you chant japa. And that's the spiritual side. The other 22 hours a day, material life, what to do? That's not the idea. Everything can become part of your spiritual life. That's the potency, the potential of bhakti. How powerful and generous bhakti can extend to the point that there is no more material life in your life. And to the point that you don't even care for liberation at one point. That's the idea. Like Guru Maharaj used to say, if someone asks him, when will I get liberated? He said the other day, when you stop asking the question. When you are so absorbed in finding everything now, that you don't care for anything else. And the Gita describes different people preparing to leave their bodies in different ways in the 8th chapter. But when the time for the pure devotee comes, there is no prescription. It's just you are absorbed in bhakti. And whenever death comes, you are absorbed in bhakti. And death will be a portal towards further bhakti. And there's death, quote unquote, basically. So, again, all this is pointing, Brahma is pointing with all this to the post-liberated status of bhakti. And especially of the bhakti of the Brajavasis that he just discovered 5 minutes ago. And he's like praising and discovering through every single verse. Let's conclude with Baladev Vidyabhushan. He also shares some brief words, and with this we conclude today's meeting. Baladev Vidyabhushan, he says, while some say that here Brahma is teaching Vivartavad, because again, Vivartavad means the theory of Mayavad, sometimes we call, and they use a lot this example of the rope and the snake, basically saying, now you think this is a snake and you are fearful, and they will say, you think you have a body, you think you are an individual, you think there is material world, but when you are enlightened, you realize there was nothing of this. Only Brahman is there. So fear will retire. That they basically use the analogy in that direction. So Baladev Vidyabhushan says here, well, some say here that Brahma is teaching Vivartavad. Of course, he's not. Actually, the example of seeing a snake in the place of a rope focuses here on this aspect. Which aspect? The superficial nature of the world disappears from the eyes of those who truly understand the nature of Bhagavan. It's not that the world disappears. It's not that the world is unreal. Maya Shakti is real. What we perceive through Maya Shakti is illusory. But illusion is real. It's a Shakti of Bhagavan. It's not non-existent. It's existent. So Baladev Vidyabhushan makes this point. The example of rope and snake here points to when you learn, he says, truly understand the nature of Bhagavan. It's not just I memorize who is Bhagavan, but truly understand that in practice, the world disappears, as we say before. As Mahaprabhu was seeing Udipana Vibhava everywhere. No? Jamuna here, Govardhan there. He was not in this world. He was in this world, but he was not in this world. Thus, Baladev concludes, here Brahma shows which is the proper use and application of this famous example. So this example is mostly known by the version, interpretation that the Advaitavadis give. But here we go, these are reclaiming the example and saying, Brahma is showing the real application of this rope on a snake analogy. So tomorrow we'll speak on Guru Purnima. And tomorrow the day after tomorrow we will continue. Brahma will continue elaborating along these lines in the following verse. So I'll put my presentation to rest here. But I don't know if you have any questions before finishing. Rigupa, maybe my reply was in some moment of pre-merging, so let's see.
Thank you. Can I be the Purva Paksha?
Yes.
Okay.
You are always ours, so no problem. I am accustomed to that rasa with you. Thank you.
Bhagavad Vidibhushan said that this is not speaking about Vivartavara.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained, of course, why. But he didn't explain the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the verse says two things. It says that when we understand the Atma, or Paramatma, Krishna, Bhagavan, then the world disappears, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And this we can explain easily and understand from our Bhakti Gaudiya perspective. But the verse says another thing as well, which hasn't been clearly explained, at least to me. That is, how is it that if we don't see the Atma, the world appears? Because that's what the verse says. Atmanam eva atmataya avijantam tena eva jatam nikilam pravanchitam.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world is created but not by not seeing the Atma.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it sound very much like Brahma is saying that we create this world.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you answer this objection?
Mm-hmm. I'll share some words, because actually the next verse is basically a reply to that question. But of course we can share some trailer of what's next. Okay.
Oh. I don't know what's happening.
No problem. So...
One second. It's here. Oh, okay.
So how does... The question of Rigupa, let's see, to reframe it, in case I've understood properly. The remaining, if you will, topic to explain of one of them will be if one does not see the Atma, then the world appears. It seems to suggest the idea that the world actually is a creation of not seeing the Atma rather than a reality unto itself, basically. Basically like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically our Gaudiya reply to that, of course, I'm not trying to share the Gaudiya perspective here. And of course, someone who follows Advaita Vedanta will have their way of interpreting that and reading that in particular way. But basically we will say that not knowing the Atma doesn't mean that... the world is not created by not knowing the Atma. The world, of course, exists perpetually as a Shakti of Bhagavan. And that's stated in Shastra repeatedly. To begin with, that we will say to, if you present the Purva Paksha from the Vibhartavad section, Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shriyate, the Absolute has Shaktis, has potency, one of them be Maya Shakti. So those potencies exist permanently. It's not that there's something that actually does not exist. So to begin with, the world exists, but the actual ignorance of the Atma on the part of the Atma creates the world in the sense of creates a particular perception of the world, which actually, technically speaking, is not the world. Because if you what's the opposite of acknowledge? Unacknowledged? No, does not exist.
Deny.
Okay.
Yeah.
But deny, okay, yeah. You cannot...
Deny the existence of something.
Yeah, but maybe you're not denying, like, consciously, I deny my... And anyhow, you are not aware of yourself as an Atma. Makes you see the world in a particular way. And you could say the world comes to existence through that vision, but actually, how you are seeing the world in that way, we are not seeing the world becomes real by you ignoring the Atma, but actually we Gaudis will say, by you ignoring the Atma, what you see of the world is actually not real. I mean, you are perceiving something which is not actually the world. No? So for us to see the world, to perceive matter, if you will, technically speaking, you have to acknowledge the Atma and acknowledge the common source of the Atma and Maya Shakti, which is Bhagavan, and then we will understand the world and Maya Shakti. The Bhagavatam is saying, I cannot recall the verse in third chapter, third canto, but he's basically saying that in order to understand Maya, you have to, I mean, in order to transcend Maya, you have to understand Maya. And once understand Maya, of course, on some basic level, which is Maya, is a Shakti Bhagavan, how does it operate, and so on. And once you apply yourself to that understanding, you transcend the influence of Maya, and you will see the world from a totally different perspective, as it actually is, as a Shakti Bhagavan in the service of Bhagavan. So I will argue in that connection, instead of saying, by ignoring my existence as Atma, the world appears. No, actually, what you perceive as the world in that situation is not the world, technically speaking, it's your own phantasmagoria due to misreading, vipararya. The word vipararya, this bhayam dvitiya vishesha, is like a reversal of, as Krishna used the inverted banyan tree analogy. No, you are seeing things upside down, actually. And by actually acknowledging the Atma, for us acknowledging the Atma means, again, acknowledging the Atma with capital A, acknowledging the source of the world, which is not us. So in that sense, we are not the source of the world. The world is not creating out of our ignorance, out of our anything. But acknowledging the source of the world, the Atma with capital letter, then we can understand properly the world, which is one of the Shaktis of Bhagavan. We can understand ourselves, which are another of those Shaktis of Bhagavan. So something like that for today.
Yeah, in 2 days we can share something. It doesn't disappear just because we realize it's on the road. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, an example of rope and a snake is that there's no snake. There is a snake somewhere else, but not there. So similarly, when we say the world disappears, it doesn't mean that the world disappears, no? But it's just that our perception of the world as we knew it before disappears, because actually it was a distorted one. Okay. Something else?
I have a question.
Yeah, Premarno.
You said that after we attain that spiritual, after we get simply liberated, we acknowledge that the snake was the rope, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the snake was the rope all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But as far I heard, as far I know, if we come back to Krishna, we have no memories of this material world.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was forever. So how to understand it?
Yeah. Of course, I mostly began explaining the analogies how the Vibhartavadis will see it. The followers of Advaita Vedanta that will conceive everything unreal except Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in that sense, we can also say the same thing you're saying in a different way. One, if you realize your unity with Brahman, it's not at that moment you say, oh, all that other stuff was actually mine, because there are no samskars in the citta, technically speaking. That's the expression. There, citta vritti nirodha. But I would say that we do not need to even reach the goal. It was a way of putting that, of course. It was a way of explaining the analogy. You know, that at one point you realize, okay, this was not actually that. But you don't need to reach perfection for that to happen. I mean, as a sadhaka, you start to have glimpses of that. No? We as sadhakas can, at least on some level, depending where we are, look back and understand how so many of these situations that we experience, fear, anxiety, doubt, or that we still experience fear, anxiety and doubt. Even at present, let's go to something more immediate. At present, as sadhakas, if you are still a sadhaka, means on some level you will experience these things. But at the same time, you have a guru has given you, as we say before, shastra chakshu. So it's a scriptural eye. So you ideally should analyze your situation through what revelation is saying. So whenever fear is coming, of course I understand sometimes these emotions are powerful and you cannot just like, wait a minute, fear, I have to see what Shastri is saying in this regard. But in time and in practice, the more you incorporate these concepts, you will be able to read reality, to translate whatever is coming emotionally and so on, through the filter, if you will, the lens of Shastra, and you will understand. I'm feeling this emotion, my mind is experiencing this, because when we say emotion, it has to do with the mind. But I understand what's actually taking place. Although I don't have the full realization of that, and that's why this still keeps coming. But I understand that this is actually, that there's no snake. Continue with the example. No, it's not. Though it's no snake. Although I'm still fearful, I know it's not. It's like if you were following the example, you were in the room. Oh, you mistake the rope for a snake. A light comes, and maybe the first 5 seconds you're still afraid because you are kind of recovering from the shock. You understand it's no longer a snake; it's a rope, but still you fear some things. No. But you already feel on another level, it was not a snake. I was safe ground here. So similarly, as a sadhaka, you may know what's actually taking place in theory, but in practice, on a realization level, still some fear, anxiety may come. But you have enough grounding in knowledge as to not be completely swayed, you say, by that emotional wave that maybe in the past you look back and say, oh my God, before that one emotion came and I just ran there, another emotion came and I ran there, and I was totally identified with it, thinking, I am that. That's me, running like a marathon after one emotion after another. I'm mistaking that with my heart's desire or something. So I would say that the idea has to do, again, of course I understand your point, you enter Golok Vrindavan and there's no some scar from previous experiences, so there's nobody there like, oh, remember when I came from that, now I realize it was all. That won't take place when you obtain what Bhaktivinoda Thakur will call Vastu Siddhi. You enter into the Leela, but as you are entering into the Leela, that means to be a sadhaka, just in case, we can realize the things more and more and more. And the more, even in advanced stages, that's been. That's been described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini. Sorry. There is a point when you really have a very deep realization of how illusory were those things that we take for real, because we are getting so close to the real. Maybe not that close as to totally lose sight of the other thing, but enough close as to realize the other things are insignificant. As we said before, bhukti and mukti at one point become insignificant. And part of them becoming insignificant means that you start to see them for what they are in comparison to your approach to the infinite. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it will mostly apply in that connection, not so much with someone, people in the Leela, like recalling their respective memories. So who were you in your previous life? And I was sadhaka, and I did all these weird things in my tree life. That will be weird in the Leela. That's not happening there. So it has more application for us in our stages as sadhakas, you know, where we can now, literally, and we should, I will say, that's part of the exercise, we should look and apply our knowledge in practice and separate and use heart, head to soften our hearts, as Guru Maharaj will say as well. It means you have to think about these things and not just like but that's implication of the difference between the rope and the snake. Right? You can look back at all those times that you felt fear or still, but understand actually there's nothing to fear about. Srila Sri Maharaj will say that. He'll say, In the beginning we feel too much risk, no gain. No? So that means you are full of fear. Because if you feel too much risk, and Gurudev say, surrender. And Krishna say, sarva dharma parityaja, leave everything and come to me. And you feel, this is too much risk, no gain. To fear. Snake. Interestingly, Rupa Goswami described the series, Aidi Bhagavati Premnasya Bhavaguti Lavabet. Say, love moves like a snake. for other reasons, no? He's saying in a crooked way, it's unpredictable. But also, you can say, it may be scary for you at some stage. You know, like, oh, this is too much. It's too demanding. Because love is totally demanding. Because it's totally giving itself to you. So it will be expecting total giving of yourself to it as well. That's how it works. I mean, Krishna wants to give himself fully. He wants you to give fully. And that's the nature of reciprocity. But we may be terrified with that. So Srila Semaraj said in the beginning, we feel too much risk, no gain. When we progress a little bit more, we will realize the more the risk, the more the gain. So you start to develop this type of change of perspective. The snake is taking another shape. And when you are more advanced, he said, no risk, all gain. Now we know in theory that all risk, no gain. But in practice, still we feel risk. So that's why we are moving with caution yet. But eventually when we realize there's actually no risk, I mean, there's risk in remaining where I am now, we will move forward with more and more speed, if you will. But it's a gradual process. But not that gradual either. That quote may be dangerous. Maharaj, padi. Step by step, yes, but not that padi either. It's gradual, but not that gradual. It's as gradual as you want to make it gradual. And that can invite to complacency also. So you have to balance patience and passion. Like the mother being pregnant. She has to wait 9 months. There's no way. So you have to be patient. But there's some longing of meeting the child. But she has to wait 9 months. So you have to balance patience and longing. Patience and longing. So we have to do the same. We are not giving birth to a child, but we are the ones in the womb of material nature and trying to get out of that. So it's a process.
Can I have a follow-up question?
Yes.
Because it's troubling me. I understand it from the point of view of sadaka, as you explained it, but when we attain our highest goal and we start, not start, but when we feel like it was forever and ever, and we never touch the material world, I understand it's not even a concept there. What's the purpose of all this suffering, all these horrors we experience here, if after all it doesn't make nobody know about it? Why the material world? I think it's a silly question, but why this world needs to exist with so much suffering? Yeah, that's my question. If in the end we don't even know we experienced it.
You have 3 more hours?
Yes, I do.
Yes. So those who need to take dinner, so we will remain with Premarnova till Mongolarti tomorrow or something. I will basically say the following, because the question in itself, you know, like has an assumption of something, which is why does this world need to exist, or why Krishna created it? Sometimes we will think in those terms. And the point is, and of course this may go a little bit beyond above our heads, but the point is, Krishna didn't create anything. It's not that the world, it's not that Krishna said, okay, now let's make the world.
But nothing exists without His will.
Mm-hmm. But doesn't mean that it began to exist at some particular point. Mm-hmm. So the world, oh, Bhagavan exists forever, His Shaktis exist forever, as Guru Maharaj always teaches us. No, Maya Shakti is there, Tatastra Shakti is there. We are not following Creatio ex nihilo as Christianity does, which basically means creation out of nothing. That's not our particular metaphysics. But everything exists forever. And God is not to be judged according to what He created, because He didn't create anything. But how He behaves with those things that already exist. The fall. I mean, He's existing there eternally. His Shaktis are there eternally. It's no beginning. And I know that the very idea of no beginning already is beyond the head, because we kind of think in no beginning terms in our head. But He didn't create anything. But whatever exists, He's dealing with that perfectly. Because unlimited jivas exist. And again, all this is of course tied to the idea of theodicy and the bad and suffering in the world and so many things that will make full sense when we are basically way beyond that influence.
But we didn't remember it then.
Sorry again?
But we will not remember it then.
No, so. I say way beyond the influence. I didn't say totally beyond the influence. So for example, at present, we may not be way beyond the influence, but on some level, by the grace of Guru and Vaishnavas, and we can look back and understand all these things on some level. Like again, the world is eternal existing, jivas are eternal existing. And yes, the ultimate potential of the jiva is to establish a loving relationship with Bhagavan, but loving relationship has to be voluntary. It cannot be forced. If I tell you, you have the option of loving Krishna, and you then ask, and which other option do I have? I say, you have no second option.
But
Nityasiddhas?
Yeah, Nityasiddhas.
They didn't have a chance to choose?
They have no choice.
But we are speaking about different category there. So let's limit our discussion to one particular category, which is enough of a mess to solve, which is us. Because if we start to compare ourselves with eternal associate, that starts to make it a totally different thing. Like say, why Radharani doesn't have the choice to be a Maya? And it's like, it's a different, totally different thing altogether. So we have to understand in our particular situation how God values our individuality. He wants us to voluntarily choose loving Him. And that's frightening, for sure. And that's also, there's a lot of deep embedded fear in most of us as to take full responsibility for all that implies fully choosing to voluntarily love Krishna. Because that's not a joke. You need to invest yourself more than what you can imagine. And most of us generally are not fully willing to do so in the beginning. So the idea of being given the opportunity to choose that ourselves voluntarily, that can be overwhelming. And sometimes there is people who ask, well, there is suffering in the world, and they reply, because God loves you. And you may say, what? That seems exactly the opposite. No, God loves you, and loving you means He considers you as an individual, and He respects your free will, so He's giving you the chance of choosing Him or not choosing Him, every byproduct of which is suffering. Because again, you have to have a second option. If I tell you, you can love Krishna, which is a second option? No second option. Love Krishna. You're like, okay, yes.
I will choose that. Yeah.
So the idea is that, and again, this is a topic that requires lots of unfolding, but this idea of love is a voluntary choice. Surrender is not forced. We hear so many times the word surrender. But unfortunately, sometimes the implication tied to the word is not very healthy, and we more think in terms of, I have to surrender. No, and someone is like pointing with it. So when it's coming, surrender. But it's not like that. It's a voluntary choice. Voluntary surrender.
Voluntary if you don't want to suffer.
That can be the beginning of that. Krishna says in the Gita, Chatur Vidya Vajante Mam Jnanas Jignas Rartarti Jnani Chavarat. We have to begin somewhere. So Krishna can appreciate that, values that. Okay, you are approaching me because you don't want to suffer. That's still not very romantic for him. But somehow he's saying, well, he's coming. He's somehow coming. So in the context of that, we will realize, and probably most of that came from that, the club of the afflicted ones. That's why we originally joined. Because not so much because we're interested in the unconditional love of the Vrajavasis, but because we are suffering like hell and we want to have a break of that for a minute. And we had that. Whew. But then after some time we realized, so now what? I'm free from suffering. I'm peaceful. What to do with my peace now? On some level I've been redeemed. What to do with my redemption now? As Richard Rohr will say, that's a real heroic question. A real heroic question is not how do I get redeemed, but once I'm redeemed, what do I do with my redemption now? Will I rest there forever? Or will I do something with that? And of course, that's our idea. I mean, not our idea, like I came with this idea by myself, but we received that from above. And if we are open and grateful enough, we will realize this is such a noble ideal, such a great thing that is totally undeserved, but still coming, still knocking my door. So it's too generous and too noble. So I cannot reject that. I don't want to reject that. I feel more and more charmed in that direction. So basically in that direction, no? The whole purpose of so many things that we have going through, or we are going through still, and we have gone through, and we cannot remember those, we will go crazy. Some people want to know the previous life and more, but as if not enough with this one. And I understand for some that may help in something, but we have to be careful. But the point is that all these different trials or things we have been going through, all the things are having a purpose in this ultimate converging point of entering the Lila. And that shows how valuable that thing is. That takes some journey. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, somehow Krishna, Sanatana Goswami makes Krishna say this, like, no, I was with you and aware of all these trials you went through and all the doors you were knocking and you were not open and you were rejected. And I was accompanying you in all those situations. We shouldn't forget that part. And we are not alone, whether in the form of Paramatma, in the form of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. That's there. The journey is there, the potential is there, the prospect is there. And I can understand that if we are going through some specific situations, we may not be able to see the bigger picture. And that's the necessity of the moment. It's not that what we are going through is unfair, it shouldn't be happening, it's too much. Because we can always compare with others and see, and we get lost in that game. But I will say that every time, especially when we are going through very difficult times, and as I think all of us have gone or maybe going, that's the best opportunity to grow. And that's why the Gita and the Bhagavatam is presented in such a critical scenarios. I mean, that's extreme. If you play out, imagine the situation being Arjuna and Krishna telling you, kill your father, kill your mother, kill your family, kill all of them. Parikshit Maharaj, you have 5-7 days to live. No, I mean, that's not a joke. But in that situation, they were able to allow reality to happen and to situate in such a way, so much purpose is coming. I always like to think in terms of, maybe I'm going another direction, but it's connected with Viktor Frankl's logotherapy and his unique system of seeing reality as having unconditional purpose. And that was his experience. And he went through Auschwitz. So what, I don't want to minimize whatever any of you are maybe going through, and you may say, tell Maharaj, I'm experiencing hell now. I believe you and I support you and I empathize with you, but Auschwitz is quite a bit of hell. And the only way he could survive that, psychologically, internally, was to find some purpose. And the purpose was not necessarily that he had like an epiphany and some light, some God appear and say, you do this, 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 but he realized, for some unique reason, me, in this, I have to be experiencing this unique situation myself, like nobody else is experiencing now. So there's something totally unique in my going through this unique, weird situation. So I take responsibility to go through that unique situation I have to go through. I'll take commitment with that, and I have conviction and faith that reality has an unconditional purpose. And he did it, and he went through that, and he developed a whole therapeutical system that saved the lives of so many, by himself first saving his own life. But, and he said that, you have to find purpose. If you lose sight of purpose, you give up, basically. And he said, that was what I saw in the concentration camp. Where as long as people have some purpose to connect with, they will survive even the greatest of evils. And the humans can tolerate so many things. We have such a degree of tolerance. As long as we find some purpose for going through that. When you lose sight of purpose, everything collapses. So he made that point. Try to not lose sight of purpose. And of course we have such a depth of purpose, such a great treasure of knowledge that can enlighten us. There's so many layers and degrees of purpose, immediate purpose, middle-term purpose, ultimate purpose. And opening ourselves to the bigger picture, that can be painful, of course, because we may be accustomed to see reality through the, how to say, keyhole. So when someone says, it's like, oh. So if it hurts, it shows what we need to grow, in which direction. And it may hurt like hell, but you have to grow somehow. And sometimes growing will be painful. When you were a kid and the teeth were coming, you're growing, but it's so painful. Or the muscles or something are moving, it's like, painful, but you're growing. So I think it's important to connect, to learn to connect these ideas. And if we are suffering, I'm not promoting masochism. I'm just saying, if you are suffering and you cannot avoid to go that suffering, because I'm not saying go to suffering, but suffering comes for whatever reason. I mean, suffering is not coming. You are perceiving something as suffering. No, some situation is putting you in. But the point is, learn to suffer. The idea is not stop suffering. The idea is learn to suffer. Because even we, in the Leela, of course, different type of suffering. But there will be suffering, Golok. In the concept of prema, it's a different category. But there is a form of suffering. And you won't be able to deal with that suffering if we are not able to deal with the suffering here. So it's not so much about stop suffering, but learn to suffer. And deal with suffering in a way that expands your heart. And again, it's easier to say than done from here, this fancy seat telling you learn to suffer and blah, blah, blah. Of course, it will return as a boomerang to me in 5 seconds, and it returns. It already returned. It keeps returning, and it's okay. That's part of the commitment I try to make in telling these words. But because I'm sure all of us can share so many stories of extreme suffering, and you feel this is the worst possible thing. No, something worse will come from. And you look back and you survive and you learn from that and you stop thinking, oh, that was the worst possible thing. I mean, I've gone through many situations with the devotees till recent times, not like in the first year. I thought, my gosh, this is like the weirdest thing possible in my life. That's the last thing I would have ever imagined will happen in my life. No. Like, for example, that I will have to leave the guru I accept the first time. And that's the last thing I would have thought at all. But somehow I was in that situation. I was like, my, I mean, I don't want to, with this I don't want to say, I'm going through something worse than you, so stop complaining. I'm not saying this, I'm just saying that. But now I look back and I realize that had such a purpose. And even if at some moment I cannot see the purpose, I have to be strong enough, not naive, but strong enough to feel I have faith there is some unconditional purpose. I'm not seeing it because of my lack of bigger picture, but the purpose is there. And it will reveal accordingly in time. And if we look back, we know so many situations that we already experienced that. So you have experience to resort to. Well, we have to be open to what Krishna wants to reveal to us. Not be too attached to how we want things to be revealed to us. Because that's not how it works. We shouldn't be having specific like expectations. Krishna, you should teach me this in this way. And Krishna, oh, you know everything so nicely already, so you almost do not need me at all. So we should be willing to learn. If something is painful for us in a particular moment, to ask why this is painful for me, and why maybe another person in the same situation is not going through that pain. Is the situation inherently painful? Or the pain is in my own mind, and I'm is triggered by a particular situation, so how can I deal with that, and so on. Anyhow, somehow I digress on the topic, but I think somehow connected and long conversation. We can continue speaking for sure. There are important topics. Braja Lila and so on, all this, but where we are as humans and how to conduct so we can advance there in a realistic way without losing our humanity. Because we want to be humans forever. Divinely humans, but not lose the humanity, our transcending. Okay, I think we can conclude here. There was the plan now, some arti will be?
Yes.
More arti?
Okay,
arti and 8, so it's in like 15 minutes. So, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gaunityananda ki jai, Grantara Sriman Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Primananda.